Everybody, welcome to Raging Chickens Out to Coop Live. It's our call-in show from Monday, November 2nd, 2020, and we are on the eve of the election. and so we're here. Out to Coop Live is a place where we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts from our own backyards and across the country. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can get both by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. But you can only join in to the conversation live through the Podbean app on Mondays at 10:30 in the morning. We might see a change up of that next week, everybody. So just kind of check out our social media, stay on that. We might go back to our 7 o'clock time, but we shall see if that's going to be doable. We are also streaming now once again live on our YouTube channel. Now, while you can't call in on the YouTube channel, you certainly can comment during the live show and to add your voice to the discussion. So get on over to our YouTube channel, like, subscribe, and share, and click on that notification bell so you'll never miss a live show. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. If you're listening to this show live on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now. You can drop a few bucks in our tip jar by clicking on that little gift icon at the bottom of your screen. Yep, you're just going to fill your digital pockets with some of Podbean's golden beans, that's what they call them, and send us a gift of your choice. Every gift you send helps support and expand this podcast. And if you're looking for more PA-based progressive talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, or Facebook. Or subscribe to his daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And a special shout-out to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great work on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongADayMan. That's @SongADayMan with two N's on Twitter. So on today's show, well, look, it's been a harrowing several months. Okay, several years. I'll admit it. Several years. Not just several months, but several years. This election season has been run through with racial violence, mass uprising, unprecedented climate-driven disasters, and freaking pandemic to top it off. And that's not all, right? On top of the Trump administration's active measures to suppress the vote, yep, that adds that into as well. Oh, no, yeah, there's that steady march towards fascism. Yeah, so pretty heavy stuff. At the same time, we are seeing unprecedented organizing, the likes of which I have not seen in my lifetime. For every challenge, it seems there's been a corresponding progressive left grassroots movements to meet it. Just think about it. From the day that Trump was inaugurated, there have been people in the streets building power. In 2018, we had a huge progressive left electoral wins at the national level, most notably with AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar. But right here in PA, we've had them too. Huge victories by the left with the election of Summer Lee, Elizabeth Fiedler, and Sarah Inamorato. And it looks like we could double, maybe even triple the numbers of progressives heading to Harrisburg after tomorrow's elections. But beyond elections, we've seen organizations like DSA and the Sunrise Movement lead the way, showing the world how movements can build power and change the horizon of our politics. So I wanted to change up our format a little bit today. I think we all could use a little bit of a break, right? Maybe even kind of like temper some of my kind of dystopian outlooks on the world by bringing some other folks. I want to bring in a panel of great people and give us their take on what we can expect when the polls close tomorrow. But more importantly, I wanted to look ahead to the organizing that will need to happen as soon as those polls close, but also in the weeks and months and years ahead. We will no doubt see people in the streets this week. On Out the Coop, Sean and I have talked about preparations that have been made to defend democracy if Republicans try to steal the election. But we can look ahead to a longer horizon, too. We will need strategies for a Trump win, for sure. But perhaps even more so, we need strategies for a Biden administration. So today, we have a little pre-election roundtable. to unpack some of this, maybe even provide a little like comfort to each other on these days, and to just have a sane conversation in the midst of all this chaos. So to help me with this, I welcome three guests today. We've got our my co-host for Out to Coop podcast, Sean Kitchen. Sean is also doing awesome work with PA Spotlight. And just so if you didn't know, he's a fantastic freelance photographer and burgeoning fashion icon, I must say, out there in Harrisburg.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it. You got it. And we got Shayna Rose, a creator and host of Sustaining with Shayna podcast, sustainability professional, and a member of Poshy's new sustainability development task force. Welcome, Shayna.
Thank you.
And we've got Leo Atkinson, co-chair of Lehigh Valley DSA, a longtime Lehigh Valley resident and former Fountain Hill council member, co-chair, yes, as I said, Lehigh Valley DSA. Welcome, Leo.
Thanks for having me.
Oh man, you got it. I'm so glad you could join it. Well, we've been I've been looking for this hookup with the folks in Lehigh Valley DSA for a bit, and I'm telling you, I think I mentioned to you the COVID just freaking threw everything to a loop. So it's pretty crazy. So today, I don't know, we'll start with kind of giving our little takes on what we can expect for Election Day, and what will be necessary, like, soon as the polls close. But, you know, before we kind of jump into that, maybe we kind of give each of our guests today a little bit of time just to talk a little bit about kind of what they're working on, what their backgrounds are, and kind of, you know, how they've been preparing, right, for this election. So why don't I go to Shayna first? And, you know, Shayna, the reason I want to go to you first is in part because I mentioned this before the show, on your social media, I saw pictures of you in the cold, rainy. So I know, you know, you weren't sitting down on the couch with a cup of tea. Right? So Shayna, you know, tell us a little bit about kind of what things you've been kind of working on and focusing on, what you do in your political work, and how you've been prepping for this election.
Yeah. So in context of the picture, so I'll explain that first.
Yeah.
So those who are listening on the show that are friends with me personally and have seen my personal Facebook page, I posted a picture yesterday of me in the pouring down rain, in the cold, had my mask on, couldn't see out of my glasses, canvassing to make sure everybody has casted their vote or has a plan if they haven't yet. And doing that to make a little extra buck on the side, especially before the election, because thankfully the organization I'm canvassing with is paying their canvassers pretty well. But other than doing just that, I, like Kevin said, I started the Sustaining with Shayna podcast back in May of this year that pretty much was able to happen thanks to the lockdown of COVID, so that's a silver lining in itself. And the reason why I started this whole platform in the first place is, as somebody that has been born and raised and still lives here in Berks County, Pennsylvania, is I felt as if there was this void of conversations happening about sustainability and climate change in general, in the sense that there was a lot of work being done, but it's very siloed, in the sense that the news is not picking it up, whether the news chooses not to pick it up or they just don't hear about it. To also, there's a lot of key intersectional issues with climate change that are happening either nationally, regionally, or even internationally that just don't get discussed.
Yeah.
And some of those are a key interest of mine. So I use this platform to kind of bring out those issues that we don't necessarily think about. But between now and about a month and a half ago, I started really trying to focus my episodes on the show about the election and how climate change and racism all play a role together. Unfortunately, I tried to make it as bipartisan as possible, but it's really hard in this political climate where climate change has been very polarized and we have such a two-party system. But in the process, I was able to interview a Green Party candidate running in a local district here in Berks County. So for me, I want to talk about politics and how it overlaps with climate change, because unfortunately climate change is on the ballot every election, absolutely, not just this one. But unfortunately, conservatives just, I'm gonna be colorful with my words, because I'm like really fired up about this lately. But unfortunately, just conservatives, by and large, not saying all of them, but by and large, just don't give a fuck about the climate.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, and I think that we've had this, this has been the case for, I think, quite some time now. But I think it's just been absolutely blatant over the last, like, 5 years especially, where it's, mm-hmm, it's a really, like, I just do not give a shit attitude. There's no even pretense any longer to, you know, like, put nice coatings on it and pretend that they actually care.
Mm-hmm.
So
you could also, absolutely, say about the pandemic as well. They also don't, mm-hmm, give a fuck about that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of, so not giving a fuck on the pandemic, Sean, why don't we go to you then? So, I mean, I know that regular listeners of Out to Coop are familiar with Sean from our Friday show. But for those folks who've just been tuning in to our live show on through the Podbean app or from this, we get a much kind of different mix in some ways for our live show, which is awesome. So, Sean, give us a little bit of sense of kind of some of your background, kind of what brings you here to, you know, to politics, and what your preparation for this election look like.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start, like, you know, I moved to Harrisburg 6 years ago, pretty much. It'll be 6 years this January to work for Rick Smith. You know, ended up getting, you know, we had ended up bartending for a couple of years, and then now I'm working with PA Spotlight. Doing research with them. 2 years ago, we struck gold with our Scott Wagner billboard, you know, calling out how many times he has sued his customers to pay their late trash bills, using the court system to strong-arm people who cannot afford to pay their bills into paying their bills. And then this year, we've been doing a lot of work following stuff with the pandemic. Obviously, like, we've had a whole entire agenda just get trashed because of that, and pandemic issues came front and center. We've been tracking what the Commonwealth Foundation and what other right-wing organizations have been doing in Pennsylvania during the pandemic. One of the things my personal favorites is you know, getting the photo of Matt Briette, the former CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation, to him getting a selfie of him wearing a maxi pad over his face, mocking workers. And this is the same guy who is spending $10 million to defend the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate through the Commonwealth Leaders Fund and the Commonwealth Children's Choice Fund. And we've dug into them, and, you know, we've been able to inoculate their messaging.
And I have to say that also, for those folks who are not who may not be from Pennsylvania, might be kind of tuning this a different way, is that when Sean's talking about the Scott Wagner billboard, they had, just as he described it there, if anybody remember, this made national news, where Scott Wagner basically lost it. Right. And went out to that billboard and basically said he was going to stomp on Governor Wolf's face with his golf cleats. Right. That was kind of like the breaking moment in the Scott Wagner for Governor campaign. So that's, you know, and again, it was like it's like you see what it takes to actually dig into that kind of the research and actually, you know, be aggressive and be assertive in kind of any kind of political campaign. But I didn't mean to interrupt, Sean, but that was just I wanted to really hammer that.
Oh, yeah. And then one of the other projects we worked on this year, we filed right to know requests with county commissioner offices around the state. And we, you know, digging into communications between them and the House and Senate Republicans on coronavirus issues. And we uncovered a lot of emails showing pretty much like political strong arming and really horrible politicization of the coronavirus coming from Lebanon County, which had emails, you know, them going against Governor Wolf's shutdown orders and them strong-arming local hospital systems and a senior living care facility into silence, pretty much, not speaking out against their plans. So, yeah, we had fun this year. Yeah, locally, I've been out helping with candidates. You know, we have a couple of really good races out here in Central PA. I'm looking forward to, especially with Brittany Lotus running against Andy Lewis in the 105, and then Shana Danielson running against Mike Regan. So definitely looking forward to that. And then later on this week, I will be out photographing whatever comes to happen on Wednesday and Thursday and Saturday with the different organizations in the state.
Yeah, so basically you're talking jack of all trades right here in John Kitchen. Absolutely. So Leo,
it's taken a long time for this to come through.
Yes, it has. I bear witness to that from the student that showed up at my office door one day that when he was still at Kutztown, basically saying, I just want to get involved with something.
Right? It was right after Governor Corbett cut education by 50%. I was like, fuck this shit.
Yep, no, exactly. So, Leo, let me turn to you now. Now, one thing that I did not realize until I was doing my prep for this show was that you were actually like a council member, right, in Fountain Hill, right? And you just – there was recently – you just recently made some news on this too as well from what I see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I actually worked on the Bernie campaign back in 2016, and when I came back here after that campaign wound down, I wanted to stay involved, so I was going out to vote, and I realized Fountain Hill didn't have enough people running for council, so I did a write-in campaign for the primary, got a few dozen people to write me in, got on the ballot, got elected, and I was on that for almost 3 years. Until recently, and this sort of dovetails with the political work that DSA's been doing. But in Fountain Hill, we've had a number of budgetary issues. Part of that's due to having a large, hospital like St. Luke's, which is quote unquote nonprofit, despite all the many millions of dollars they make. But a big part of it is like a lot of communities in the country, having a massive police budget relative to the rest of the budget. About half the money in our budget was going to police and police benefits. I'd been working for 3 years to try to get that number down and just couldn't get any traction with the rest of council. So this year, when we were overviewing the budget, I just couldn't get on board with what they were presenting, without making any real changes to the police budget, and I made my resignation in protest to that.
Yeah, because so talk to me a little bit about then too what's going on with Lehigh Valley DSA these days. Because I mean, it's no secret, and I think I might have mentioned this to you when we were going back and forth a little bit prep for the show. But one of the things that that I firmly believe is that the Lehigh Valley really is one of the keys to the future of the progressive movement in the state of Pennsylvania. It's one of the most rapidly growing parts of the state, and from my perspective at least, has been relatively underrepresented until recently when it comes to kind of social movement work. But the DSA out there has been doing really bang up work in really organizing, not just around electoral stuff, certainly not just around electoral stuff, but around immigration issues, around kind of say gun violence, even pushing through a resolution, I think it was in Bethlehem, right? The Council for Medicare for All, too, as well. I mean, so you all have been doing lots of stuff.
Yeah. No, we've been doing, like you were saying, DSA is a really big tent. So a lot of our members are really into electoral stuff. A lot of them aren't. They like a lot of this issue stuff. So, we've been working with local unions, supporting them. When the Postal Workers Union was out there protesting, we were out there with them, helping organize protests this summer. We try to stand in solidarity and help folks out who are trying to organize at their workplaces in the Valley. Like you were mentioning before, we were big involved with the resolution supporting Medicare for All in Bethlehem, as well as, helping support the Bernie Sanders campaign during the primary here, and the Tara Zirinsky campaign right now for the general election. We endorsed her as well. We've been involved with everything from, providing support to the Black Lives Matter defund the police protest and actions this summer, just really trying to get involved all across the map.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, we had Tara Zirinsky on last week, actually, an Out to Coop Live, and had a fantastic conversation with her. It really looks like she has got a really strong shot to switch that, move that from red to blue in that district, but not just for the sake of having a Democrat, but actually with a significant progressive agenda. So
yeah, I think, you know, and that's why she's really the only candidate we have supported in the Lehigh Valley. Not that, you know, we don't want there to be a Joe Biden presidency when we compare him to Trump, or, you know, getting Democrats into the state house. But, you know, she's really embraced the kind of agenda that we think is necessary for working families in this country.
Fantastic. So let me kind of throw it out here. So now, I mean, I don't know about everybody here, but for me, I have gone back and forth between funk, being in a complete funk, to being enraged, to being like depressed, to being like energized, every possible like emotion leading up to this election. And so here we are, right? And now we're like a day away. So tomorrow we're going to see the final day of voting will be tomorrow, and that we're going to see these results coming through. I really want to get to where we're talking about looking forward to the organizing that happens after this election is, well, actually, at least after the polls close, because when this election is over is an open question at this point. But, wanting to be at a point where, you know, having a sense of where you think things are and what your experiences are, and what do you think we can expect going forward tomorrow night? So I don't know who'd like to take that, but if somebody wants to jump in, we can go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to talk
about
it.
Yeah, go for it.
DSA has been hoping for the best, but we're preparing for the worst. You know, we're working with groups like Lehigh Valley Stands Up, Power Lehigh Valley, and others to have a plan in action to support, monitoring the election on election day, but also making sure we're holding the counties accountable, Lehigh and Northampton County, to make sure all the ballots are counted and we get an accurate count, a fair election. So, you know, we have plans in place, we have communication in place, and we have a lot of members who are, ready to respond to help make sure protests are nonviolent, safe, and, make sure that this election, can't be stolen, like a lot of the fears are out there.
Yeah, we've been getting ready for this for a few weeks now, especially like the after the election. And, you know, being able to sit on the weekly communication calls and, you know, sitting on the PA Stands Up call on Saturday morning, you know, for the media training, it's almost like a sense of excitement that we're getting to this point now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've kind of felt burned out for the past couple of months, but, you know, I feel like I'm getting out of that funk pretty recently, and it's like we're here. It's like right in front of us. I don't know. I like to go back to like that Lord of the Rings analogy, but I feel like that's where we're at, just like waiting for this epic,
like, battle
standoff to begin.
Great.
But no, I mean, like,
great. You're fucking Sauron now. That grid's great.
But no, I feel like that's where we're at, like, with all of this. Like, it's just, you know, I really hope Florida flips tomorrow night, like, real early. Like, if Florida, Arizona, and North Carolina go, then we won't have to be talking about, like, the days after this, like, in any sense. But, like, if it's close, you know, it's been amazing seeing the preparation behind the scenes with all these organizations across the whole entire state, and not just in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, or Harrisburg. Like, you know, it's going to be in Lancaster. It's going to be in Lehigh Valley. It's going to be pulling these connections that, you know, were made during the Black Lives Matter movement over the summer.
Absolutely. And Shana, where you are on this? What do you think? Whether it's, say, preparations for tomorrow, or just kind of your sense of where things are at this point?
I feel like it changes all the time.
Yeah.
And I guess, to be honest, personally, part of the reason why I decided to take up this canvassing job is I felt like I could at least apply semi-meaningful work before the election, but also distract me away from the news. Because I think, for me, I keep going back to this idea of, like, nihilism. I feel like it's a factor of either nihilism, flare-ups of really bad anxiety, or some little optimism, but then also that inner like fighter in me. And I don't know, when we were talking about earlier about like this battle or this duel, all I can think of is for those of us who are Star Wars fans, the whole Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker face off, something like that, that nice. I could see happening. But I also, for me personally, I had these weird like suspicions of how 2020 would pan out throughout the year, and I haven't been wrong yet. So I don't know, for me, I'm trying to like live in this space in my head of thinking, okay, well, I haven't been wrong yet, and I've like foreseen some really bad things happening,
right?
And I haven't been wrong, but I don't know, I just really hope that the United States won't have its own version of the fall of the Weimar Republic, when in 1933, when the Reichstag in Berlin was burned. And I really hope we don't get to that point. But I feel like the shit that we've been seeing in the news these last like 3 days, with in New Jersey, Trump's people have blocked the bridge.
Right.
And I guess that may, I don't know, maybe that was even the same bridge that the whole Chris Christie debacle happened with. I could be wrong. But so there's that. And then the thing in Texas, and now the FBI is involved investigating that. And Trump is calling them patriots and good people that harassed and drove people off the road. And I step back and I think, regardless if you don't like Biden as a candidate, even if you don't vote for him, I don't understand how you can, in a sane way, think that that is okay to ram somebody off the road.
Right.
I feel like we've descended towards a fascist dystopia, but we're really on that threshold of like, I feel it's like as if a car is halfway falling over a cliff. Are we going to fall off the cliff, or are we going to pull ourselves away from that cliff? Because I feel like we're on the brink of that.
Well, you know, this is something that, you know, when Sean and I have talked about frequently on the Out to Coop podcast, was I feel like I'm constantly in this space where I, like you, you know, as someone who is a science fiction fan, right, and is a Star Wars fan, you know, science fiction has always been a certain kind of guide for me. Like, it's a way of thinking through problems. It's like taking a tendency in the present and kind of pulling that thread or that tendency out into the future to see what it might look like, and see what that's like. And I'm also, I'm frequently in this space where It, on the one hand, I feel like, you know, we should be like screaming at the top of our lungs, we're going off the road, right? Mm-hmm. But then our everyday life, right? You know, things like having to get groceries and like, you know, waking up and getting into a routine and doing this stuff. There's like this veneer, or I don't know, veneer is the wrong word, but the dailiness of life also suggest back that, like, oh, you know, things are okay to a certain degree, right? I mean, it's not like we don't feel like there's a meteor like in the sky looking at us. We can see it in the sky, but nonetheless, it feels like that's what's about to happen. And it's a weird space to be in, because you don't want to be like a conspiracy theorist, right? Mm-hmm. But if we learn anything from history, if we learn anything from the ways in which but countries fall into kind of authoritarian rule and fascism, is like, anyone who studies this stuff is saying, look, we're ticking all the boxes right now, folks.
Yeah.
I know, like, I was going to say yesterday, I mean, like, my mom thought, like, for, like, the past week, I'm, like, was going down, like, that crazy conspiracy theorist route. Like, you know, Trump's trying to steal the election. We can't let him do this. The people are deciding, not him. And yesterday she had a talk to me. She's like, well, she started from the premise of like, well, what happens if he legitimately wins? And I'm like, no, that's not the premise to start at. The premise is he's going to lose by all indications tomorrow. And like, what is he going to do to win?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to overturn these results, right? I mean, like, we're seeing increased voter turnout in every state around the country. You know, you have...
Well, Texas right now is at 108%, right? 108% of 2016 vote already banked right now.
Yeah. Right? You have a Texas trying to throw out 100,000 ballots today. You know, Republicans in Harris County. Like, you have these things that are happening where it's not Democrats filing lawsuits to stop people from voting. It's the Republicans filing hundreds of lawsuits to stop people from voting tomorrow, or to have their votes nullified.
Right.
And I mean, I was explaining that process to her, and like, this is how we dip into authoritarianism. Like, once Trump declares victory on Tuesday night when he doesn't win, like, then all bets are off the table at that point. And that's when we need to respond.
Right. Exactly. So, Leo, where are you in this one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very confusing tomorrow night for a lot of people, because I think there's, like, you know, while it could be an overwhelming victory for Joe Biden, I think there's a chance it'll be quite confusing with how these rules have been set up. You know, whether or not it's a county being slow to count their votes. You know, I know in Pennsylvania, counties can sort of make their own decision about how they're counting, whether they're going to do it, you know, straight through 24 hours, whether they're going to start the day after the election. You know, I've seen a lot of differences there. So I think there's a chance tomorrow night, you know, by some indications, it might look like with the present counts that Donald Trump is up. So I think for a lot of Americans, you know, that might put a lot of doubt in their head about the election. And I'm sure, you know, Donald Trump is going to, you know, do everything he can to exploit that. So I think we have to be, you know, out there getting the message out that there may be uncertainty tomorrow night, but we have to let the whole process carry out. We have to let all the votes be counted, and we have to be ready to be out there in the streets and, you know, arguing that, you know, very publicly, and, you know, safely for everybody out there, but just, you know, an overwhelming reaction that we want this election to be legitimate and for every vote to be counted.
So one of the things I'll say to that, it seems locally in Pennsylvania, the message is getting out that the results won't be known by tomorrow. I think it's almost like a widely accepted fact within like the general voting populace. Like my mom was explaining that to me yesterday, and she doesn't follow the news whatsoever. So it seems like that message is trickling out to voters in Pennsylvania that we will not know the results of the state tomorrow. But like, what is Fox News going to do? Like these, we've seen the gaslighting and like the far right propaganda with regards to Black Lives Matter movement and the uprisings that are happening with regards to police killings. What are these people going to do tomorrow to push a patently false and dangerous narrative?
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think that's like, this is a good place to talk a little bit about, okay, what, say, preparations and organizing for when the polls close tomorrow, what we can expect. So, but remind everybody who's kind of tuning in or maybe on our YouTube stream, whatever, is that you can help support this show for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Or you can hit that little gift button at the bottom of your Podbean app, if you're listening on the Podbean app, and kind of send us some love right during the show. It'd be fantastic. And the best thing that everybody can do out there, if you're listening into this, share the show. If you're subscribe to our podcast, subscribe to the podcast, like us, leave us a review. Best way to get this information out and to kind of get more listeners and connect us to other like shows. So let's talk about like this. Like, I think it's a reasonable scenario that we can say tomorrow night that we should say a reasonable scenario is that we are not going to know the results. We know that in Pennsylvania, several counties have already said that they are not going to count the votes until tomorrow and until Wednesday morning. And we know that there's been a series of Supreme Court cases, especially in some battleground states, where there's questions about will there be additional lawsuits, right, for those ballots that come in for mail-in ballots or if they come in kind of after the election day, even if they're postmarked, even if they follow the rules. Like the recent ruling in Minnesota is an example of this. I mean, Pennsylvania, we've been fortunate thus far is that most of the rulings have gone in our way, which is good. But I think we can expect just kind of what you're laying out there, that Trump is probably going to kind of declare victory. We got kind of these two tiers going on. One, we've got the national scope, right? And then we've got the kind of the statewide kind of regional scope, right? So I think we could expect that Trump will probably, right, if he's kind of close, he's going to declare victory, right? And then a bunch of scenarios of what happens after that. So let's put us in that kind of mindset and talk a little bit about kind of the kind of organizing that that people are preparing for this week. Is like, where are you going to be, right? What do you think we're going to need to do on that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as the kind of the ballots going to count? Because here in Pennsylvania, right, as Leo was saying, to get every ballot counted, right, by law they have up until Friday, right, for those ballots to come in to be legal ballots, as long as they're postmarked by Election Day. So that seems to be going to be the immediate kind of challenge in terms of like kind of organizing and struggle in order to defend the democracy. So how do people see this playing out? Leo, why don't you pick us up from there? What's it like up there in the Lehigh Valley? What are some of the kind of things that you're thinking is going to be necessary? Exactly as you said, if you're going to have to defend a kind of democracy to make sure every ballot's counted, what does that look like in practice? And what kind of mobilization have you seen on the ground?
Sure. So, with the organizations we're working with, you know, one thing we've done is we've had a number of our members and, you know, other people in the Valley sign up to be ballot observers who are going to be observing the counting sites to make sure the ballots are being counted correctly. But we also, on the other side of it, in terms of protests, like I was mentioning before, we have, a marshaling team inside DSA called the Red Rabbits, where they're trained and ready to respond to, you know, the counting sites or poll sites tomorrow. To, you know, try to keep people who are protesting, who are, you know, feeling very passionate about this, as, you know, a lot of people are, you know, myself included. But just to be there and make sure they can de-escalate situations and keep people safe, but also keep them effective. So keep them out there and, you know, making sure the officials in charge of the voting process, the people in charge of the ballot counting, know that there's public pressure to make sure this gets done correctly, you know. So I think, and I've heard about this happening around the country as well, you know, but I think right here in the Lehigh Valley, you know, we're going to be out here in Easton and in Allentown at the voting offices and, making sure our voices heard.
Well, and then full disclosure, I have donated to the Red Rabbits because, I think that that organization and kind of what you guys are doing up there is fantastic to get out there and defend this. So that's good. And now, Shayna, about you? Where do you sit in this?
So just as a quick update, I was searching the internet as we were talking about this. So I think it's Amy Siskind. I don't know. So she posted on Facebook, and I don't know what her source is, but she posted within the hour that 2.4 million Pennsylvanians have already voted. And then I can give the rundown of the numbers. So the Dems are 1,596,194. The Republicans are 555,805. And then no party affiliates are 245,115. And that's only 82% of ballots returned. So about 351,000 are still outstanding. I think that I have hope when I see numbers like this, mm-hmm. but then I also hear factors. So having gone out canvassing, so I had a woman I talked to last Wednesday here in Berks County that did not receive her ballot yet. And then also when we were knocking on doors in downtown Reading yesterday, and I did not speak with homeowners in these situations, but my cohorts did, that said the people got their ballots maybe within like the last few days or still haven't got their ballots. But those who did get their ballots recently did not get the secrecy envelope that's necessary for their vote to even be
really?
Counted. Yeah. So their ballots came naked, mailed to their house. So you have all these different factors that, in addition to the lawsuits that the Republicans are trying to lay out, that you have so much confusion with people that some people even think that they can take their ballot to their polling place. And it's like, no, you can't do that. Like, that's, it won't get counted if that happens. And some people still believe that if they take their ballot with them, or they tell them, oh, I decided I wanted to vote in person, that they can just automatically vote on the machine. That doesn't work either.
Right.
So because of that, I largely need to reach out to one of the local party leaders, and they got this information from the county election services office about different scenarios. And I produced like a 12-minute video last Tuesday about it, because I was so frustrated that I wasn't hearing any information, well-detailed information, talking about worst-case scenarios if they don't get their ballot yet or whatnot. Now here's a new one about people who get their ballots mailed naked to them. And it's, I mean, it's not their fault if they mail back what they had. I mean, I don't know even what to tell a voter. What, do they have to make a special note and say, look, my ballot was explicitly mailed naked to me. It's not my problem that it's mailed. I'm mailing it back naked. So I don't know. But then I also, on the flip side, so going back to these numbers, I feel like I have some level of hope a little too, because I mean we're seeing record numbers, period. And I feel like we were also seeing record numbers back in 2018, and a lot of 2018 was similar in the sense of the anxiety we were having, where we didn't really know what was going on. We didn't really have a pulse until all the votes were counted and election night was over. And that created a level of good momentum, because if 2018 didn't go the way it did, I think these back half 2 years of Trump's presidency would have been fucking hell. And I think that 2018 proves the fact that the tide could turn. It's just a matter of, has the tide completely turned? So where I think the Republicans are trying really hard to not have people's votes counted, I saw, I think numbers, it was last night or something, that 93 million people have already voted, whether that's physically at a machine early or have voted by mail early. And that is 68.6% of the votes from 2016 total.
Yep. Yep. So, Sean, before I turn to you, because I know you got you've been involved with discussions about specific planning kind of for this week. But before I do that, I want to say, if anybody's out there who's listening that you want to kind of call in, you want to join, you got a comment with it, please do. So I'm going to turn to Sean, and then afterwards, if you come in, it'll show up on my screen. I might not answer right away. I'll wait to kind of Sean gets there. But if you do have a comment, you have a question for anybody, please feel free to hit that call button and come in. So, Sean. What's your angle on this? I know you've been doing a lot of this. You've been involved at least with discussions about planning about what goes on this week.
Yeah. So, I mean, we won't know until tomorrow night. I know like a couple of our people will be on phone calls at midnight tomorrow night, game planning and national response. You know, so there, in the past few weeks, there's a couple things I want to say. One of the things that we should be vigilant for, especially here in Pennsylvania, is the Pennsylvania House reconvening on 6-hour notice. They are due back on November 10th. And there's a possibility that they may pass their voter integrity commission.
Oh, God.
That election.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, what I will caution people.
Sean, can you just explain what that is for people who may not be familiar?
It basically gives House Republicans give themselves subpoena power to go after election issues, quote unquote, in the state. So it'll give them power to seize mail-in ballots. So their game plan over the next few weeks is to draw this out until December 14th. Their long-term plan is to have the Supreme Court force the state to stop counting and then decide to have either appoint their electors through the House Republicans again or through the Supreme Court and just like stopping the count. But one of the things that might be an issue that popped up, I think it was in the Vanity article this weekend, but State Representative Kevin Boyle was profiled in the New Yorker about the voter issues here in Pennsylvania. You know, one of the drumbeats he's been pushing personally is this Voter Integrity Commission. And one of the things he is personally worried about as the Democratic committee member of this, where this bill, this resolution came from, is that Republicans will either call a 6-hour notice and rush back to the House to pass this, or will pass it, end up sometime. You know, this is a bad idea that's not going to go away. So we have to be vigilant for that. One of the things I think that we should look at nationally within the state as well, labor wasn't messing around with that slideshow that was circulated a few weeks ago and got leaked to the media. The AFL-CIO, AFT, Rainy Weingarten, AFL-CIO, SEIU members were all talking about it. I think we're starting to see a response from labor in other cities if Trump refuses to step down or refuses to acknowledge the votes. Are we talking about rolling strikes in Rochester? Boston AFL-CIO has signed on that there will be a general strike. You know, we may actually see the like work stoppages within the coming weeks. Pennsylvania is key for this. You know, our response on Wednesday and our response on Thursday and this Saturday will set the tone for how this goes out. You know, and I am of the thinking that the response on Wednesday and Thursday will lead to not only more rallies here in Pennsylvania, but I could see this ballooning into a state, into a national protest.
I think that's, especially I know that like Sarah Nelson has been kind of integral to this, and you know, they were, the flight attendants union were one of the, basically one of the people that kind of got the government to open back up, because they basically said, okay, you're not going to give this relief to him. Guess what? We're not flying. Right. And I think that was a wake up call, I think, nationally, that and the teacher strikes, right? The wildcat teacher strikes that took place across the country, that is giving labor another sense of what is possible and the kind of support. Cause you know, labor leaders up until relatively recently would see that kind of action as being the thing that they were afraid of because they thought they would lose public support. Instead, they got just the opposite. Right. So I think that has helped embolden it. But also, you know, I think there's been a lot of like push from below, from members, right, making demands upon their leadership that, you know, we are not going through this for another 4 years.
And we're not having this election stolen by a Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
A conservative Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
You know, like, no, I think, we have to demand that every ballot gets counted in this state. And that we don't allow a voter integrity commission or, you know, voter suppression commission to pop up in the Pennsylvania House. The only reason why this didn't become what it is because of Representative Schemmel getting a COVID outbreak. Getting COVID. That's the only reason why this did not get passed.
Yeah, what Sean's talking about there, if you have people listen to the show, know that there was a vote scheduled on this Election Integrity Commission, whatever the hell it's called, they had to not vote on it because the freaking nut jobs in the State House who were kind of going around without masks and spreading COVID all over the place, and there was an outbreak, so they shut down the session that day that they were going to vote on it. And that's like literally... it was because of chance. Well, not exactly chance. I mean, this was bound to happen given the fact that they're going to, you know.
Saved by the bell.
Yeah, saved by the, right? That was like crazy. So Leo, I don't know if this is too quick to shift. I don't want to kind of cut you off. You got thoughts already on this. But one of the things that if we start to kind of think about our horizon going forward, I mean, I think there's no doubt that we don't, there's probably several scenarios. I mean, and I heard there was a, I was listening to this podcast yesterday. I'm trying to remember which one it was. I've been too deep in the range of media lately. But so, you know, say on the one hand, right, if there is a kind of huge wave, right, and we see an overwhelming victory by Joe Biden, right, I think then what's possible in terms of the level of chaos that we're going to see this week is tamped down somewhat, not completely, but tamped down somewhat. If, however, as people are expecting, and we've seen some tightening in the polls, especially in some of the swing states, that we're likely to see some kind of chaos moving forward. As a matter of fact, we've seen kind of drips and drabs from different news media about the National Guard being briefed on kind of problems. We've been seeing things, police forces being briefed on the potential of unrest and so on. But we also have to be thinking long term here, right? And one of the things and reason why I'm especially glad you're able to join us today, right? Because one of the things that I think DSA, and again, I want to be clear, I'm not saying DSA is the only organization that's doing this, but I mean, I think notably, DSA was one of the organizations that really hit the ground running after 2016. I mean, DSA has been around since I was, you know, I was in high school, right? I mean, before then. So I remember like talking to DSA people way back in the day, but it was really what we saw the Bernie Sanders campaign. And then we saw what happened in 2016 is the DSA numbers begin to explode. And with really with a commitment towards kind of like community-based organizing and actually kind of, you know, organizing where we live, not just at these kind of like, you know, national political levels, and then also helping to shift the discourse about what's possible, shift our political horizons. So let's just say for the sake of argument, here, because I think that I think people are more prepared for what happens if Trump wins. I mean, after the despair, but I mean, people like we're just gonna have, it's gonna be like full on what we've been doing right now, except every day going forward. But if Biden wins, that can't be the end of the game, right? I mean, we can't do what people did when Barack Obama was first elected, say, okay, he's got this. Okay, let's, we could all go back home. We can all watch TV. And I know that DSA is one of the organizations that's preparing to think about, okay, how do we begin thinking long term? So if you're beginning to thinking about that, the kind of organizing that we might need to do if in a Biden administration, how much you begin to talk about that?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, I personally voted for Joe Biden because I think, you know, the alternative is, you know, dangerous and scary. And, you know, we've already covered that. But I think, you know, most of our members are going to vote for Joe Biden. But, you know, the DSA certainly is not a big fan of Joe Biden. And I'm certainly not personally a fan of Joe Biden. I don't think he represents, you know, what this country needs. You know, he's been campaigning on this idea of return to, you know, quote unquote, normalcy. But, you know, what was normal before Trump wasn't working for tens of millions of Americans. You know, we're talking about, you know, a country that is the richest country in the world, but, you know, tens of millions of people don't have health care, or they can't afford the health care they do have, who are making poverty wages, who, you know, don't have any time for themselves or their family, who have no, you know, say in their workplace and how their working life is run. I mean, so these are all issues, and there's still going to be issues in a Joe Biden presidency. So what we need to do, like you're indicating, is continue our work and, if not, you know, double down and, you know, tell Joe Biden and you know, the establishment, because again, even if we flip the Pennsylvania legislature, it's not going to be run by progressives. It's going to be a very establishment Democratic legislature. So what we need to do is to keep them honest. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, what influences politicians is if their constituents are organized and if they show up and if they make their voice heard. And that's what we're trying to do here in the Valley. You know, we've seen in this country like a big erosion in union membership and a big erosion in local civic institutions in the last few decades. And those are two pillars of communities where you can organize around. Well, that's why we're working to try to help increase union membership, try to help, you know, form new unions and new chapters locally, and also just get people engaged with their neighbors who believe in these same issues.
Right.
Because when you have these connections and we can turn out, you know, dozens or hundreds of people to an event, politicians want those votes and they can't help but pay attention.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, and what we mean, I mean, and I know what you're saying, is like when you're talking about when people are organized and making their voices heard, we're not just talking at the ballot box. I mean, the ballot box is actually one of these places, but we're talking about in those city council meetings, right? I remember after there was the, there was the police brutality we saw on the streets of Allentown when people started showing up to the Allentown City Council member and, you know, outside the city council meetings, kind of banging on the windows, banging on the doors, right? Letting them know, let us in, let us in. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about. And we're also talking about, you know, say people for running for office, but then people organizing the community and be able to kind of attend to needs about what needs to take place. And then Shayna, I was also, again, one of the reasons why I, you know, really was glad that you were able to join us here today is because we know that you've been, you know, a climate warrior as long as, you know, like, yeah. and we're not talking about, and it's a little bit disturbing to me that it is next to impossible to like to frontline like the news about like what a crisis we are in terms of the climate. And it seems mm-hmm. to me that we cannot afford for 1 second to pause and say like, okay, like a Biden administration, we'll wait to see what happens. It seems like we're in a crisis right now. And if we have any hope of even, you know, having like a livable future, mm-hmm. right? We need to get on this absolutely immediately.
Yeah. And I wanted to touch on an earlier point before
please, yes.
expounding on that is, so I've had a couple people that I've run into with my canvassing cohorts this weekend that there was this, I don't know if vivacious is the right word, but like lively Puerto Rican woman who was like, if Trump declares victory tomorrow night, she's like, first thing I'm doing Wednesday morning is going out in the streets. And I just have a feeling that she's not alone, that there is going to be so many average people and citizens that are just so fucking tired of this shit. And I mean, they're not going to take it anymore. So, I mean, that's just the chaos in which we live in. But the climate crisis is only going to get worse if we are cursed with another 4 years of Trump. And in that whole factor in itself, the U.S. as of Wednesday will officially be out of the Paris Agreement. So I don't know what that means fully and entirely, but hopefully now, because of the delay with COP26, which is the next major UN conference that talks about climate change and where they vote on a lot of these factors that go into play with the Paris Agreement. So that's going to be delayed till November of 2021. So theoretically, if we have a new president, then it's possible that we could be re-entering into the Paris Agreement without any pause. Major pause, in the sense that most of those negotiations would reconvene in the coming months, preparing for the major COP26, and then also those discussions. So that being said, Joe Biden as president, that is the bare minimum he could do. And there, by God, there needs to be more than just that. And I get frustrated with people that don't understand the complexities that climate change has that's wrecking our world. And I don't know how to better explain it to people who are either political or apolitical to understand that this is not an us versus them. This is not a liberal versus conservative issue. And I just feel like I've come across people over the years who don't understand that concept. It's like, if we can't live together on a habitable planet and decolonize our thought processes of how we've had relationships with the earth as white people, then we're not going to get anywhere.
Yep.
And the most vulnerable people in our communities are just, are, it's just going to get worse. And I don't know. I just, something that's been on the back of my, in the back of my head, that's been like frustrating me for these last few weeks. It's something as simple as, so I'm a part of a congregation that's very much open into discussing, especially the more religious side of approaching climate change and addressing it. And it's just interesting to see one of the people who has not been an outspoken supporter, but like understands the necessary need and has supported me through this process of trying to bring this community along. I see the other week at one of our services that they pull up with a Trump sticker on their car. And I just, I think back to, people have been making posts. I think it was about, if you have a family member who you say you love that is of the LGBTQIA plus community, but you actively vote for somebody who is against them or will do anything to stop them from loving the people they do, I feel almost the same way that that can be applied to many other issues. Right. So it's like, why support me and the cause, or why support the idea of bringing about change and really addressing the climate crisis if you go ahead and then vote for Donald Trump?
Right. I hear you. And I think, but you know, I think that this has been one of the problems that I think the left and progressive left has faced for a long time, right? And this is that I think for at least for the bulk of my lifetime, we've been on the defensive. Right. And we've made a mistake, I think. And one of the big mistakes, and this will resonate with some of the things that Sean and I have talked about. But and that is that we go to battle over, like, you know, with science and with facts and with reason. And we want to explain to people like how what is and we have here's what the scientists are saying. But the political persuasion, right, what it's going to take to move people is a different kind of language, right? Is that people do not always make decisions based upon, say, the rational scientific fact. Matter of fact, there's research that shows this goes, you know, when you confront people who are wedded to one particular way of thinking, confront them with kind of facts, they actually, it deepens their own commitment to that position. So one of the things, this is where my hopefulness comes in, is that what we have seen, like, you know, with the Sunrise Movement, with the introduction of the Green New Deal, is that we've got a vision of a different version of the future, not just the past and not just the present. And this is where I think that, you know, just like when we say, like, and why I love the Green New Deal as a place to begin, right, to begin and push that concept, not just kind of like, let's just address climate. Let's do what we've done in the past. But it brings all this together. It says you can't have, you can't confront the climate crisis without confronting the kind of the ability to have access to medical care, or the ability to have fair wages, or the ability to protect our frontline communities, our ability to kind of like listen to the knowledge of indigenous peoples who have been so left behind and so brutalized for so long without having racial equity. That the Green New Deal is that place. Right. And again, it will change and think, but that kind of vision, I think, going forward is really the kind of bold agenda that we have to get behind. And it's not the kind of thing that is, I mean, put in some sense, Naomi Klein wrote about this a while ago when she's wrote, this changes everything. It's basically just saying that, look, we're at a point right now that the climate crisis, you know, it is like, you know, again, you know, Marx's old thing, socialism or barbarism. Right. And we're at this point and the climate is forcing that question. Right. The climate is at the point is like, OK, we can go. And I have multiple kind of dystopian future versions of what this looks like if we do not address the climate crisis. Right. But there's also a version of addressing the climate crisis that will protect only a very small group of people. So we're at a moment in history, it seems to me, that the movements are the ones that are going to define the future. And, you know, Democratic Party, they can kind of, we can put as many progressives and left folks in there as possible. They can either get on board or we're going to have to start primarying every single one of those Democrats that basically says that is not going to get on board. And, you know, I think that's really what it's going to take. But Sean,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Shana, go ahead.
Can I highlight some of those key points that you mentioned there? Yep. So there was an article, first of all, because you raised a couple great points, is the, I think it's Grist, published an article within the last few weeks that pretty much said there's science behind the fact that if you try to tell people like eco-friendly tips, that is not effective. So giving people ways to reduce their own emissions or footprint or consumption, that just simply doesn't work. And which is interesting because that's been an effective way for corporations to deflect away from their toxic emissions and consumption of waste to the consumer. And the consumer is distracted and not really addressing the fact that I think it's what 100 companies around the world contribute to 70% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. So that in itself, I think, is important. I mean, that's a whole conversation in itself. But then you were also talking about the way people on a psychosocial level have really addressed this. And I there's so many factors in that alone, yep, that you could go down a rabbit hole of a conversation. But there's been a lot of research and more development in these discussions around complacency and why people really aren't effectively addressing climate change. And I think that's because we're collectively going through this process of climate grief. And the first stage of grief, whether it's climate change or it's your own personal grief, is denialism. And then after denialism, we are in this space of being alarmists and we're terrified of the fact of what's happening. So in some ways, I feel humans will eventually get to the point that we'll have effective change. But I don't think we will get there where we will be late to anything effective change.
No, I think that's right. And but here's where I would make the distinction, right? And I think this has been a problem that I constantly have these conversations. We're talking about kind of, will people get on board or not? And this is where I think we need to make a distinction between human beings and kind of our political systems, right? So mm-hmm. We've got to remember is that if we're talking about human beings getting to the place where there's a kind of an enlightenment, which the vast majority of people are kind of on board to that, that's a long-term horizon. But we live in a democracy, right? We live not in a kind of consensus-based community. And so what I think we need to do, and this is where, something like the Green New Deal, where we have to really be thinking about the need to make sure that we get and maintain and then exercise power through the democratic mm-hmm. means. Because all you need, right, is 50 plus one, right? Mm-hmm. And then and a will and a backbone and movements that are going to push that. And that's, in my view, right, where we got to go. So let me turn to Sean, and then I want to get your all's kind of closing thoughts on the day, the message that you want to send out to the world on this day. So Sean, give me your vision, man. Where do we need to go after the chaos?
What do you mean?
we have to address the immediate aftermath, right? Of what's going to happen this week. But if we pull back that horizon a little bit, kind of what's on the agenda that we need to be organizing for, kind of moving forward?
I think legislatively, nationally, I think the first, I've been starting to, I think we have to, day one, end the filibuster, start expanding the courts, the Supreme Court and the different federal courts, and then we have to start passing laws that will strengthen and secure our institutions. Especially when it comes in terms of voting and, we really have to reform our institutions after the last 4 years with what Trump did. I mean, I don't think the problems that, like, he has caused within, like, the Department of Environmental Protection or the different agencies, like the Department of Education, can be done on day one of a Biden administration. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to... I mean, like, I hate to say, like, spend capital on reforming stuff, but I feel like that's where we have to go at this point, just to strengthen our institutions and make sure we, you know, have a Voting Rights Act and stuff like that. You know, we don't have this, these issues. And to, like, stop Republicans from abusing the courts in the future to try and steal an election that they think it's their right to steal.
Absolutely. And I would say that, you know, everyone should check out the American Prospect had an issue not long ago that went through all the series of actions that could be taken on a day one without this is without the need to go through Congress. Right. This would be primary executive actions or would be enforcing existing laws on the book. Right. This is kind of part where you can instruct certain agencies like the EPA or something like this. Right. Or the labor Department of Labor to kind of institute these rules. Right. And they did a great job of breaking all that stuff down. You see, there's some significant things that could happen on day one, right? That does not, you know, we don't need to get mulled down into these conversations about, well, the Senate, we don't know if they're going to agree. But no, no, this is something that we need to be pressuring right at the top there. It also seems to me, though, that we also got a lot of things that we need to be paying attention to here in Pennsylvania. I mean, as soon as this election is over, I mean, we've got a governor's race coming up, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a governor's race. We have a budget that has to get done. So there's that. We'll have an open Senate seat. And, like, most importantly, like, we have to flip the House in order to stop the attacks on the judiciary within our own state. So, like, yeah, we have a governor's race coming up in 2022. But theoretically speaking, if we do not take back the House, which, you know, Democrats are, you know, it's a 50-50 chance we do that. You know, if we take back the House, we put an end to the bullshit attacks against our courts that would, you know, gerrymander the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court because the Republicans lost control of the court in an election 3 years ago. They're going to do the same for the Commonwealth Court, you know. So the process is they passed a constitutional amendment last year. It goes to the House and Senate, bypasses the governor. They're going to do it again this year. And if they do it early enough, they can do it early in January, pass this constitutional amendment again, and then they will change the dynamic of our courts in an off-year, odd-number primary. Because it then goes to the ballot. It's a yes or no question to the ballot. And it's a lot easier to vote yes on something than it is to vote no.
Well, there we have it. So Sean, let me ask, since I got you here, so if you had kind of closing thoughts for people out there on this eve before election, what would those be?
Get ready. Mentally prepare yourself for Wednesday and Thursday. You know, enjoy your vices and sleep
enjoy
up.
Enjoy your vices.
I mean, basically at this point, like, it's pretty much like it's a waiting game. And it's just like, you know, mentally prepare yourself for the result. We're not going to have election results tomorrow. Prepare yourself for the fact that Fox News and the whole entire right-wing media echo chamber on Twitter is going to say otherwise. And I mean, like, we're just going to have to buckle down.
Absolutely.
And, you know, our response, you know, the response here in Pennsylvania, demand that every vote gets counted, you know, will set the tone for the rest of the country.
100%. Leo, let me turn to you. What's your message going out there to folks as we're kind of looking at the eve of the election moving forward?
I think, you know, first of all, we definitely need to, you know,
Leo, can you bring the mic a little bit closer? Can you bring your headset a little closer?
Oh, sure. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
Okay. Yeah, we need to keep that pressure up to make sure the election goes smoothly and fairly. But moving forward, we need people to realize that, you know, the election is just the beginning of the struggle, and they need to keep fighting with each other. They need to keep making these relationships with each other. We need to, get socialists, leftists, progressives elected next year in municipal elections. We need to have these people turning up at, you know, council meetings, getting to know their local budgets, getting to know their local elected officials, local bureaucrats, and, you know, really get ingrained in their community to make that change, you know, 365 days a year, not just one day every, you know, 2 or 4 years.
Absolutely. We'll be needed to hit the ground running. And Shayna, what's your final words for people kind of moving forward here?
I will say the same thing I said last week when I talked about this on the podcast, is buckle in.
Buckle in.
I feel like that's the best way to put it, is buckle in, because it's going to be a rough ride. And I don't even think just this week. I would even argue these next few, several weeks. And I think the biggest thing we also need to keep in mind is not only buckle in, stay sane, embrace our vices for once in our life, but also dwell in community with each other.
That's a great point.
And because the community we have is what's going to get us through this, because I think the big political machine, especially the Republicans, like to emphasize rugged individualism, but that hasn't gotten us anywhere productive. And we see that we work best when we're in communion with one another. So as much as it sounds kind of cheesy with the Biden ads, I feel like, that are out there, together we're stronger. I mean, it is true, but it kind of does sound cheesy at first, but I think that that's what's going to get us through, is us being partially mentally prepared individually, but also trying to work with each other in this level of chaos.
Well put. And I think that's a great message to leave us on today, because we are going to need each other. And no matter, we're going to need each other this week, we're going to need each other tomorrow night, and we're going to need each other in the future. You know, if I have to say personally, one of the things that has meant a lot to me over, especially after the past several years, and what I've seen other spaces in my life kind of close off to kind of say progressive possibility, right? Not just the election, but, you know, even in my job, for example, right? My union has been hugely hit after the Janus decision came down and basically stripped away the right of kind of closed shops in public sector bargaining and the union. And that's had an impact, right, on what people see as possible within our union. And those things, they mean something. So I've been super appreciative of this space, of the people in my life that kind of remind me that I'm not alone, you know. And I think that that's absolutely critical. And that's part of what's necessary, in my view, to keep us all moving forward and keep staying in the struggle. That is the essence, in my mind, of solidarity. One thing that, if people are looking for something, a place to spend election, there's a lot of places you can go, but I know that Pennsylvania Stands Up has got an election night gathering. I'm actually going to throw this down into the chat. There's an invite, and there's going to be Nikhil Saval, Elizabeth Fiedler, and Rick Kujewski, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. It's just kind of like a watch party, kind of join in and kind of be with other people. There's lots of other organizations and groups that are doing the same thing. So I would encourage you, no matter what happens, right, where are we going to go? We don't know at this point. But it's not a bad idea to look for those spaces that you can gather either in person with family and friends that you can feel you're confident you're going to be safe with, or kind of join some folks online, so at least you're kind of there with others. So appreciate it. Well, listen, I appreciate the hell out of all of you, and I appreciate you all taking the time to be with us today. Want to remind everybody that's out there that this will be part of our podcast, so that you can sign up for the Out to Coop podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just look up Raging Chicken or Out to Coop, and you will find us on there. Please, and if you do kind of subscribe to the podcast, make sure that you kind of give us a review, like us, let everybody know, give us that 5-star review, go to our YouTube page and smash that subscribe button, smash that like button, so that we can kind of spread this even further. It's one of my commitments that has been for the last several years and will be going forward, is the absolutely necessary to build out our progressive media and to build connections with each other, not be in competition with each other when we're talking about building out that kind of progressive media, building out our movements, right? I think that one of the things that, and I'll say this, what I've loved about the work of DSA and why I will always support DSA, why I'm a member of DSA, is because kind of a clear understanding that, yes, we can be kind of left and organized on the left, but we also understand the necessity of kind of actually working kind of with people and pay attention to people. Why I love what we're seeing in the climate justice movement is the fact that, no, we are in this together, and that we're going to reach out to people from across the kind of like, you know, interest groups or identities and say, this is a space where we organize together, and that we understand, just like a family, right? Family members, you're going to have disagreements, right? And then you work through the disagreements. But a disagreement doesn't mean that you kind of like, you know, sever relations with everyone forever just because you have a disagreement. It's about working through and doing the hard work of solidarity as we kind of move forward to that progressive future. So thank you, Shayna. Thank you, Sean. And thank you, Leo, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I hope I'm going to reach out to all of you again, because I hope to have you on in the future. Maybe some debriefing afterwards after all the stuff is said and gone, which would be fantastic. Yeah. And just for everybody else who's on the Podbean app, after we say goodbye, we're going to hear some of the outro music. Say goodbye to Sean and to Leo and to Shayna. And then if you want to stick around for a little kind of afterward, you can stick around for that. If you have any additional questions, just for me. And that last afterward will be exclusive content for our patrons. You can become a patron of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress and becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month to help support this podcast, to help support kind of progressive media in this state. We'd appreciate all of you. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for the comments in the chat today. I really appreciate it. And you know what? Hang in there, everybody. Stay close. Stay strong. Get prepared. We're in this for the long haul. I can see it. I can see it coming. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll see you next time. See ya!